This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Let's move over to ransom letter number two. 4 days later, a second note landed in the same Tucson newsroom about Nancy Guthrie. The final deadline hadn't passed. $6 million was on the table, and whoever wrote this walked away from every dollar of it. Here's the second note in full, exactly as the sheriff's department released it. It says, Guthrie family, we did not fully grasp the seriousness of her physical condition. We never intended to hurt her. That was not our intention. She perished shortly after she was taken. We believe it was heart-related. She is buried in nature now. Nothing you could have done could have changed the outcome. We want your family to know this and hope you all can find peace. We are truly sorry. It reads nothing like the first very mechanical, very institution-based letter. It's almost like someone else wrote this. The only reason it's connected is because it apparently came from the same IP address that the first one came from. So the odds of that happening are slim to nil. They came from the same place. Written by the same person? I guess that's the question. What's your take on letter number two, Siobhan?
It really fascinated me because it's almost got a literary quality to it. And the use of two words jumped out at me because they're not words that I think in normal conversation we would use. She perished.
Mm-hmm.
She perished. You know, most people would say she died. If you want to soften that one a little bit, she passed away. But the grasp and the perished, that made me think this is somebody who's a reader, you know? They're the kind of words that a writer, somebody who's looking at a more creative use of language would use. So that jumped out at me. That was interesting. The other thing that became, I think, predominant in this second one was the need to present themselves as a moral person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not a bad person. And then moving near the end with almost an attempt, she's in nature. You know, this is an attempt to soothe the family and comfort them.
Yeah.
And that was rather extraordinary. So surprised me.
It's like families of bunnies hopping around her grave and there's daisies growing.
Yeah.
It's like, what are we like? I'm like, voo, doo, 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 doo. I'm expecting that sort of music to be playing in the background. I mean, so they literally go from, we want $4 million. If we don't get it by then, it's going to be six. And if she's not, she's dead. And now we didn't really mean any of it. We didn't mean to hurt her. Like, oh gosh. I got more questions. Robin, your take on letter two.
Yeah, so definitely in line with what Siobhan and many others said too, the second letter is preempting just in case they're caught. They want to show that she didn't die by their hands. They're doing the best they can to push the blame off on they didn't know, they're sorry, mea culpa. And that happens quite frequently in cases where there is an accidental death, but at the hands of someone that really shouldn't have been there. But This is the real big letter to me that says that ransom was not the primary objective, because it also rings true to this is a panic escalation, that if they truly wanted the money, why not wait till the deadline to see if it's delivered? They didn't wait till that second deadline. When she passed away in their hands, the first thing they did was not go for the money. They went to say, uh-oh, I got to make it so just in case I am caught, I can say I wasn't about the money. Mm-hmm. So again, the home invasion for the intent of getting something in value in the house was, to me, it was an object that they're going for. When they couldn't get what they're going for because they had bad information, couldn't find it, whatever it was, and they encountered her, panic escalation, take her, plan B. Note one rings as plan B. We've got to get at something out of this. Note two says, I want nothing to do with this anymore. Because the entire thing fell apart. I got to distance myself, run away, hide, and put a mea culpa out there and never speak of this again. That's what this says to me. That's why I still think that the whole ransom for extortion was plan B of what they wanted to do. That's how these read. So that's if, again, we'll go back to the world of maybe and if this was written by the person that actually abducted her, or if it's secondhand information, it's someone who's having fun playing with law enforcement. Although I don't, I don't, I don't see that language in there, but you leave all possibilities open.
Why even send the second note, Siobhan? I mean, exactly that. I mean, why not just wait to see if you get your money in your Bitcoin account? Why even stop? I mean, they were ready to pay. We've seen, and Coffin Daffer just did an interesting piece on that. She actually has seen the account and she's posted about it, the Bitcoin account, because it was accidentally posted by someone in authority. Whoops, we put the wrong thing up. Yeah, exactly. Go figure. Nanos did something that he shouldn't have. Nah, not the Nanos, I know. So that gets posted. So it looks like the family was ready to pay. They were communicating. We are ready to pay in the string to the Bitcoin. Why even do the second note? It feels like they felt like, in my conjecture, a moral obligation or something going on here with that language. The language almost struck me as biblical to a certain extent. Perish, shall not perish, but have eternal life. Mm-hmm. Things of that nature, lines like that. And if you are someone who's practicing a religion of some sort or whatever, you know, there's a lot of mental gymnastics that are likely going on there to somehow in your mind feel morally okay with what you've did, and you're using language like this. Something sometimes people do to justify their shitty behavior. We'll get into that with Koberger in a moment. But that's what struck me about it. Why send the second note unless you're just doing it for your own guilty conscience? And maybe that's the answer.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good guess. The other piece, I think, as you said earlier, is that it's kind of a preemptive, oh my God, when we get caught, what is our way out of it? You know, that we never intended this to happen. They use the word intent. This was not our intent. We never intended this to happen. And so, you know, that says to me also that they're trying to make the case. I'm really not, you know, I have no malevolence here. Even though we said in the first note, she will be killed. But, you know, they're trying to cover this base but we really didn't mean to kill her. And the other thing is, they may have felt like by following through with the Bitcoin that it, and the longer that this went on, the greater the odds that they would be caught.
Yeah. I'm wondering if they're sitting there like thinking it's imminent. They're going to find us. Yeah. So we better have something on the record of what we're doing and why we're doing it. And I also wonder how much of a response that was to as well to the threat that was made at that moment in time. While the Guthries are making videos trying to inspire people to do the right thing, Trump came out and was like, we're going to fucking kill you. You know, like that. I wonder, like, if that almost scared the person a little bit, too, of like, oh, it was an accident. You know, I wonder, you know, Robin.
Yeah, we never intended to hurt her. The whole language is saying this is plan B. It wasn't our intent to do any of this. And for them, again, we're all on the same sheet. Fear outweighed greed. Mm-hmm. And they, because the greatest motivator of human behavior is fear, and they feared for getting caught, especially because, again, I'm going to go back down this Bitcoin area. You know, when you look at porch guy, again, at the very beginning, it's like, does this guy on the porch, I don't know how to use, but I don't know a thing about Bitcoin. And I think I got maybe a half the degree of sophistication more than the guy in the front porch does. Does that guy look like a Bitcoin guy? And going from the singular to the plural, of the pronouns in the first letter says it's leaning more towards like one or two people tops involved in this, some guy on the front porch. I think that part of that fear of being caught was they didn't know the first thing about how to use Bitcoin and not get caught using Bitcoin. Because otherwise, why not wait until the second deadline? And the final word there, we are truly sorry. What ransomer in the history of mankind has ever said they're truly sorry that they kidnapped someone for ransom? Mm-hmm. No, that's the whole point. If you actually were intent on kidnapping Nancy for a ransom, you wouldn't be sorry. You'd be sorry you didn't get your money, but they're sorry she died.
So what sort of tells would be going on with this person or persons right now? Out there in the world, if they're amongst their friends, amongst their family, in the environment in which they live. Is this something where there might be something off about some of these people? Because if we're to believe that it's not just lip service, that they're not just saying we're truly sorry as a way to somehow gain some sort of leverage for if they get caught, when they get caught. If there is truly a regret going on here, might that be seeping through in other elements of their life, Siobhan?
That's a really good question. You know, it's hard to answer because we don't know enough about who this person is. My guess is they're not talking about it and they're trying to compartmentalize it and, you know, going with this story of I'm really not a bad person. They're externalizing responsibility. It's really not my fault that she died. She had a heart condition. I would think they're having a lot of anxiety. Mm-hmm. But is that showing up to other people in their lives? Maybe, maybe not.
Yeah. Definitely on all those. I see someone, according to the writing, this is someone with a lot of empathy. They're not psychopathic, at least on that spectrum to that degree, enough to take someone though, obviously. So there would be leakage from at least from the language there. And so when you have leakage, you're going to have tells, you know, to your question. And so either they're really good at masking them, which I don't believe so. Human beings are really poor at masking it along your baseline. So I would think, if I was this individual and no one has turned me in and given tips yet, either your circle of confidants is nothing or one that did it with you, or you ran from your baseline. In other words, they got out of Dodge, set up a whole new life and said, I'm not ever talking about this again. So when they go to a new location, the new baseline's established as who they are from that moment forward, because there would, in my estimation, there would be leakage from who they were and how they felt before the event to how they were after the event. And that would give the you know, people to give tips on if anyone was in a position to want to do that in their circle, or they just are so tight family, tight cloistered group that says we're never turning each other in, this is a horrible mistake, and we'll never speak of it again. So it's either really, really that tight or they ran.
What does it tell us about where the investigation is at right now, the fact that they finally have released these letters after 6 months in their entirety? Siobhan?
My guess is they're feeling stuck. And, you know, is this something, I mean, that's how they caught the Unabomber, right? But he had a really eccentric style of communication. And his brother was the one that came forward. So are they hoping that somebody is going to recognize something in this? There's not anything. I mean, it's there are these bits and pieces that are eccentric, but it's hard for me to imagine that this is distinctive enough for a relative or somebody else to come forward and recognize it.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's hard to see anything you could grab on this, because literally that first one, I write like this. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, and then when the empathy side, I mean, you guys get the emails and stuff from me. I'm very emotional. I'm very empathetic. Yeah. Matt, the only thing that's lacking that I don't have is I use a lot of emoticons. I'm surprised he didn't have it in a little teary one on there. Right. But yeah, I didn't see a lot in there, except the only thing you might be able to get if you are someone associated, if someone uses the word destroyed, when something goes sideways in a house, that might be a trigger, because again, words, people get idiosyncratic with the words they use, and there's not a lot to go on there, but the word destroyed when dealing with something, that's not like when something breaks around the house, I've never used the word destroyed. So maybe this is an idiosyncratic word for someone that might be a trigger. So there's going to be tiny, tiny little one or two words in there. And what it would take is someone in that close enough circle to hear them describe things that one or two of those words in there were idiosyncratic to the person they're matching. And then it's going to take that one person that's curious enough to say, huh, could it be? And then that next step of just calling in a tip. But there's a possibility.
I don't know the answer to this, but was her light actually destroyed? I think we know it was burned out.
Right.
But we're not working. But is destroyed the operative word that should have been used? I think that I kind of wonder about too. How many shitty managers at like the Sizzler or Arby's do you think are being turned in right now with employees going, oh, they wrote that. They always write these horrible emails late at night. We're out of the Arby's sauce. The horsey sauce needs refilling. And if we don't refill it by Tuesday at 7, you're out of a job. And then they send the apology letter the next morning for the very harsh letter. I truly is not what I meant. I had a couple cocktails, and I'm sorry I was really harsh about the horsey sauce. You know, how many people are doing that right now going, this seems just like my manager? I don't know the answer to that, but I'd imagine there's several people being pointed at right now. They're probably, I have nothing to do with this case. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we continue to work our way through examining this case and wherever it ends up taking us.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.